Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Welcome to episode 69 of Growth Marketing Today. I'm your host, Ramley John, and I'm here on a mission to help marketers and founders like you sharpen their marketing skills by talking to some of today's marketing experts. Today I have Azhar Shad. He is the head of growth at User Pilot. Onboarding is such a critical phase of the customer journey when customers form their first impressions of your product. And we know that first impressions tend to stick around. It's the moment when users decide whether they're going to stick around or they're going to delete your app or churn out of your product. This can set you up for long-term success, or you can doom your relationship to short-term failure with your users. In this episode, Azhar Shad, he discusses the fundamentals of customer onboarding. In episode 69, you'll learn, first, what is minimum viable onboarding? Second, the biggest mistakes companies make when it comes to customer onboarding and how to avoid it. And third, the fundamentals of onboarding that you can follow. I've created a Growth Cheat Sheet with all the notes from this episode. Why take notes about this podcast when you can steal all the actionable tips from this episode? You can go to growthtoday.fm/69 to get that now, or you can find that link in the description of wherever you get your podcasts, whether this Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Breaker, Overcast, Player FM. There's so many players for podcasts out there, but you can find the link in the description so you can get that free growth cheat sheet. Before we jump in, I just want to thank those who made this episode possible. These folks help cover the cost of hosting and marketing tools so I can focus on getting amazing experts that you and I can learn from. So I want to thank the sponsor for this episode, 42 Agency. They are a demand generation and ops agency for B2B SaaS companies. You can check them out at 42.agency/GMT to get a free road mapping session. That's FourTwo.agency/GMT. I also want to thank my Patreon supporters. They get an ad-free version of this podcast and get all the growth cheat sheets I have so far. So my early adopters, thank you once again, Jamie from Las Vegas, Veronica from London, UK, Fabricio Marches from Brazil, Nicholas from Sydney, Sam from New Zealand, Joseph Valenti from Quebec, Canada, Louis Nichols from Switzerland, and Anwar from Canada. Well, enough about this. Let's jump into my chat with Azhar. Hey everybody, I have Azhar here over at this podcast. I'm excited to talk about him. He is the head of growth at User Pilot. How is it going, Azhar?
It's amazing. Just came back from SaaS Talk, met amazing people, amazing response there. Really happy, and the weather is nice, better than Dublin, so really enjoying it.
I mean, I heard Dublin's weather is rainy and cloudy like 90% of the time, right?
Yeah. And some friends of mine, they love Dublin because they're in tech companies and they say Dublin is amazing. But I said I'm happy with Munich because it's just easier to have 8 months at least a good weather and 4 months bad weather.
Nice. I'm putting you on the spot here, but what was one of the biggest learnings that you got from SaaS Talk?
So I'm about to make a blog about it.
Cool.
The biggest learning I would say is that, and this would be a bit more too promotional for some other brands, I loved how ProfitWell branded themselves. They had the coffee in there, they had the sessions in there, they were speaker sessions. So I think the biggest learning is how people do marketing and how ProfitWell did the marketing and during the conference, and they had like 10 people coming in there. I think if you ever want to do a conference exhibition, I would definitely suggest you to have a lot of swags that are very useful and a lot of speaker sessions. So they like take the entire experience, conference experience, to make it amazing for people so they remember you. So do great conferences, great coffee, give good coffees, and also do sessions, speaker sessions, and also invite people to get swag for free, and then help them out, and wait for the people to come back and remember your brand.
Nice. Yeah, that's true. Before we jumped on this podcast, you're wearing a ProfitWell hat, right? You're wearing their swag.
Yeah, I'm a big Peter Zotto fan now because I met him yesterday, and yeah, he wears it all the time on the pricing teardown as well. So I'm just wearing it. I think I feel cooler now. I feel more American cooler.
That's funny. Where did you grow up in Germany? I know we chatted and you said you're based out of there.
Yeah, so I'm based in Germany for the last 5 years. I studied here. The education was for free, so that was another hack of mine. So not to pay for 100,000 American studies MBA program. But I'm from Pakistan, and I studied there till I was there till 25 years of age, and did my BBA. Was a field sales guy, so I used to be in very bad, shitty weather outside with my car, doing selling the telecom connections to companies who don't need customer who didn't want me to be their office knocking all the time, and that was also an experience how to do cold sales, office visits without even telling the customer, and then giving them a bump. And that's where I'm based from, and that's how you see that my accent is very, very Indian or Pakistani, and actually I am a mixed as well. So
let's talk about that. Like, so you studied there for 5 years. How did you get that role at head of growth at UserPilot? Like, did you just apply, or did you just come across somebody from that team?
Yeah, so it's a funny story actually. I used to have my own company called eComply, and I've been a 2 times founder already. I think head of growth is a position where the guy, the person should be very much experienced in all the different stages of a customer journey. And from activation till the end, retention, loyalty, like, you know, so this is the huge customer journey. And as a founder, you take care of all the roles when you start your company. My other two companies, one of them was BlaBlaCar, Uber for long distance logistics, and the other one was GDPR software. So I learned all the growth stuff while being on the job, and I think, and a lot of companies reach out to me saying that, hey, we want to have you, because they want to have like ex-founders who might not have that successful brand before to actually come to their companies and grow their business, because they know how to take care of the marketing, sales, customer success, customer support, and even sometimes operations. So this is kind of a role that is there, and it's a very interesting role. It was not there like 7-8 years ago since Growth Hacker came in. And I would say like it's more of a customer, chief customer officer kind of a role where you can do anything out of it. And and that's how I got into it. And the way I got into UserPilot was that I was in touch with UserPilot's co-founder before, even like while I was at my previous company, and they were just looking for a consultant initially, and I said, hey, I can help you out here and there, and you want leads, you're a friend of mine, I'm happy to do it for free. And I was doing it for free for them initially, and then the trust started developing, and that's how we got to know each other really well. And just by helping somebody for free and giving them good advice, it turned to a head of growth position. And so I'm kind of partner as well. Like, it's just not head of growth, I'm the kind of third important person in the company. And it just happens because I was there for somebody and helped them out.
Yeah, that's great. That's good that you were helping them for free. That's always like a great way to like show your value first. And that's what I suggest to people who are trying to get into startups. I want to ask what UserPilot is. Like, for people who don't know, what do they do?
Yeah, so UserPilot is a user onboarding and product adoption software for companies who are moving towards more product-led growth, where they want to onboard the users at scale and show their users different kinds of messaging in-app whenever it is necessary. For example, when a user comes for the first time, when the user is learning about your software. So it basically makes the aha moment and user activation much easier by showing different tooltips, pop-up models, checklists, and PS software in app, so that the other person can understand your app and understand the value of your app without you going in and doing personally.
How long have they been around for?
So they've been around for the last 2 years. We just started having a huge growth since last year, since I joined. So things are growing very fast, and you will be hearing a lot of news soon.
I gotta ask, because like people talk about your competitor AppQs. Like, how does UserPilot compare with something like AppQs?
Yeah, so this must be on record. Maybe they will hear it as well. We love AppQs, to be very honest. We love AppQs, and we love that they have educated the market really well about onboarding, adoption, and aha moments and activation a lot. And they are there since last 6-7 years. They have done a great job compared to the WalkMe's of the world, who are much difficult to use. So we love it because they have educated the market. And the difference between UserPilot and AppQs is that the algorithm, detection algorithm, where you try to detect an element in app, is much better. It comes out of from a technical developer, so a developer who was making his own app. So you get full control. So sometimes when you give this tool to a developer, they say, I want more control. So it comes out of more control. So you have a lot more padding spaces there where you can play with it. You don't have to code anything in there. And then the third thing, which I would say that is amazing about that, we are much easier to use. I mean, AppQuest also is very easy to use, but we are much easier. Our builder is much easier to use. And the most important point where I thought would never be our differentiator is having a great support, which means that so product like AppQuest and others, we get a lot of support requests, and we learned with time that even though you've set up, you will still have 5 questions to ask, and just being there as a support team proactively, we do help a lot of companies out there. And we have a great support as well. So whenever things go wrong, you see a wrong flow at the wrong time, our 24/7, almost 24/7 support is there to help you out.
How big is the team now, like after you joined?
Yeah, so I was the third person, but now we are like around 10 people working in the team, and we're just hiring more and more people. And I'm trying to give away my roles away. So like I started with content writing. I still do content writing. I started doing link building. And so now I'm giving this away to other people and focusing more on sales myself, because I think I am one of the, I think I'm good at sales after 8 years, I can say that, of doing sales. So yeah, so giving more content stuff to other people and doing more sales, and then eventually I think there will be more of the responsibility to take.
Is it a remote company or directly based out of Germany?
So the company is based out of Jerusalem, and we are actually an American company, and I work from Germany because I live here. And so I think part marketing and sales team will be in Germany, and we are eventually going to move to US, the entire team.
Okay. Yeah. Do you know we're in the US?
No, still deciding.
Hopefully.
Two days ago, we found out that Boston is very expensive, so we can't move there.
Yeah, it is.
So
it's funny.
Still thinking either somewhere in US. We will figure it out in a couple of months.
It's funny because I was just in Boston. My wife, her birthday came up, and so she wanted lobster. So we drove down to Boston from Toronto. That's a 9-hour drive just to get lobsters, and it was expensive. Like everything was expensive. Like we were looking for a hotel, expensive. Lobster, expensive. Like, yeah, but it's a really, really smart town. A lot of engineers, a lot of smart folks.
Yeah, I think that the talent is a bit more expensive there because of the universities around it. So Harvard is there, Boston University is there, Northeastern is there. So I think because there are bigger companies paying a lot of money to the talent out there, you naturally have to compete, and then it raises their prices of rent and everything together.
All right, I want to shift gears and talk about onboarding. And it's something that I've been looking around, and you know, like ProfitWell, Project Campbell talked a lot about how a lot of companies focus more on acquisition. I think he did some crunching, and like 80-90% of blog posts are all about acquisition and not really about activation or onboarding and even retention. Now, why should founders and marketers care about onboarding? Why should they give a care?
Yeah, so I actually have the numbers exactly from ProfitWell, and we will listen to this name a couple of times in the podcast, I'm pretty sure. So yeah, I was just digging some numbers from them, and I found out that if you have a functional onboarding, just functional good onboarding, it increases your conversion from 8 to 17%. And if you have functional plus value-based onboarding, that increases 10% more. What does it mean by that? Functional is how to use your product. Value is how to use your product, but also I know what I got out of it. So these are two different ways to think about of onboarding. And it seems that companies who are doing better onboarding have 27% almost better way of converting rather than more way of converting than the companies who are not doing it really well. And so that was just one number. And then the second thing that I recently found out from ProfitWell as well is that companies who have doing better onboarding have a better perception from the consumer's part, like users' part of it, and they see less drop-off. It means that people who learned about the product were easy to were it was easy to set up, let's say. And once they were easy to set up, within 21 days, they did not churn or they did not, like, the drop-off was less. And so I think as a businessman, as a growth hacker, as a growth person, marketing person, my job is not to just bring people in, but also after bringing people in to help them to understand the value of the product. So I think these are two important things. In short, I can say it can help you scaling really web a lot. It can help you increase conversion and retention. And the most important thing that they have also done a research on that it helps you reduce churn as well. So like if you do a better onboarding, they're like 25% more chances that the user will be less churned. And this is what we are also seeing with User Pilot as well. So when we see a customer is very well set up, even after having onboarding, the user is not churning because they have set up. So they come once or twice on a week, check the numbers, go back, and they're all set up. So they should keep working on it, but they're really set up. And since it's so sticky product, they don't want to take it out as well. It's not like something you just use one email marketing and move towards another. I mean, email marketing is also a huge thing, which part of email you're looking at. But, you know, so churn is, you're reducing churn if you onboard the customer correctly.
Yeah, and that totally makes sense because, you know, I like to think of onboarding as welcoming somebody to your house, right? You're welcoming somebody to your house for a party. If you just open the door and it's like, hello, and then you let them walk around, they're gonna be like, this guy's a jerk. Like, he didn't even show me around. He didn't show me where to get the food. He didn't show me where the restroom or the washroom is. So that's why I think logically it makes sense that onboarding does help with churn because it's the first initial experience into your app, right? Like, it's really, really important.
Yeah. So I think you can take this example when you go to a small shopping center and some specific brand and when you get in, there's a person smiling at you and you get in and when you start looking at the clothes and they say, hey, may I help you somewhere if you have a couple of different clothes there? This is all onboarding. This is just facilitating the sales process. And I think we can learn a lot from the hospitality sector to implement them in the software sector.
Interesting. Yeah. That's a good way to put it. I'm going to think a little bit more about that. I want to know why SaaS companies, why companies in general, overlook onboarding. Why do you think they overlook it so much?
Yeah, so I think this is, we have this product market fit porn out there that we have to first focus on product market fit. So they say, hey, regardless of onboarding, we should first think about helping customers understand the value of the product so that they actually understand the product and we have automatic sales. And once we have automatic sales, that we know that this much numbers are coming in, only then they want to improve the onboarding. They do a little bit initially do some kind of onboarding. They have a welcome flow in there, but then you wait for the user to explore the app yourself, which is kind and correct initially, but they do it like, and it's okay to do it that way. But when you really have some kind of product market fit, or let's say some kind of way to know that, okay, these many users are coming in and these many users are converting, how can I improve that? If you start focusing on that conversion number, you automatically start thinking about onboarding. So I think they first want to focus that if there is a need and they focus on validation first instead of a revenue number. And so that's why a lot of companies don't do it. But there are other companies as well. Even a couple of my favorite companies who are like in 180 million of investment they got recently. And the thing is, when you jump in, when you have a couple of models in there, but then your salespeople come in. So you say, hey, my sales team will be actually going to onboard them. So it's a lot more non-scalable way of improving customer experience by giving salesperson personal touch in there. And maybe salesperson or customer success person can understand how and what user want, and then they want to scale it to in-app onboarding, in-app experience. And that's the second way of where the companies have actually found something and have ignored it because something is working for them. They are happy with the numbers. I mean, it's growing. But in-app experience, let's just get the email address and then let's just bombard them with a couple of emails from sales guys, and the sales guys is there to convert them. So this is how software companies think. And this is how we used to think as well. So I used to work for a SaaS startup based out of San Francisco. And After the first the user logged in, we did not even show welcome flow, and we said, hey, create your first digital certificate, but never focus on how, like, we never focus on intentional onboarding in there. And I was doing the whole job of onboarding a customer, creating their first certificate, showing them this is the value, and then telling them, hey, this is how you do it. And then, so a lot sales, there was a lot of sales led software services, and now it's getting more like, you know, product led. And so this is the reason why a lot of companies are not doing it. And there are a lot of companies that are still sales led, and they disagree with product led. And that's why it becomes a huge experiment point to actually do it or not.
You said that they disagree with sales led. There's this whole movement of product led growth and product led onboarding. Why do they still reject product led growth? Like you talked about, like they reject it.
So I even at the SaaS talk, there was a huge conversation about happening between me, April Dunford, and Georgiana Lodi from Forget the Funnel. And one person really loves product led growth, and one person still is unsure about product led growth. I think it's just the mindset, and the reason why product led growth is still like a questionable thing, because people are already making tons of money with an existing process. Changing the entire process is not easy, and I think we all resist to change, even our personal human behavior. So I think the product-led approach will start kicking off when like tons of companies are doing it. For example, I don't know. So JavaScript language was actually accepted after 20 years. It was there for a very long time. So I think that adoption model of product-led growth is slow, and this is how humans behave. So some people will do it. Some people started their journey with free, and it worked for it. Somebody started free and did not work for it. I have a customer who churned from user pilot, and he moved towards more sales-led approach, and that's working for him. So why would he go back to product-led? So that's why people have experimented and something worked, and now they don't want to go back because something is already working. Why would you want to further fix an existing fixed process for them?
Change is hard. Like that's something that we see with onboarding too, right? We have to change people's mind from their old ways of doing things, and now we're trying to adopt this product. I want to know what you think are some of the biggest mistakes that companies make when they're trying to bring on a new user to your app when they have no idea what exactly the true value of it yet.
Yeah, so that's a very good question, actually. I believe that there are a lot of mistakes they're doing it. But the first and the most common mistake that we also highlighted on our teardown as well is that people want to confirm the email address. And confirming the email address reduced the drop-off increase the drop-off. And what happens is that you go in there, you confirm your email address, you go to another screen, you try to confirm it from there. It might be in your spam, it might not be in your spam. But basically, the user didn't get the email. And then the user dropped off and never got back. So that's one thing. They want to activate the user by having so much friction in there, but it somehow doesn't work in their favor. And I think there are a couple of ways to improve that thing by letting the user directly inside the app and then ask them to verify. So a user will never be activated for you until they really not verify it. So you can always put a banner on top, say, hey, please verify your email to properly use the app and motivate them. That's one thing. And the thing is, people say on the other side of the world, which does that still, which is that they still have a verification email. They say that we used to get a lot of spam. So we need to hold the spam there. And I found a third way to do it, which is actually which was recently shared by Growth Design, that you can actually let the user confirm it through some kind of coding inside that. We can share it in podcast notes. But the idea is that you can ask the user to be on the same screen, confirm the email address, and then let them go in. So this is the third way, which is coming across to growth people, and which is great because the user can explore the app without going to another screen, another junk email, something. And I think that will work.
Do you have any other ones? I'm sure you have a list because you've been doing a lot of onboarding teardowns with Wes Bush, the author of Product Led Growth
Book. Yeah. So the other mistake that I think is that, and we did this, we found this yesterday as well. We're doing an onboarding teardown for StoryChief, and so it will be live soon. And we see that companies are telling you the product tours aspect. So we at User Pilot, we do not agree with the philosophy of product-led growth. Product tours, and product tours are something that where users see, click on here, then next, then next, then next, then next, and it's like 6 tooltips which show you where exactly which button does. And this is a wrong way to approach this. And that's why we don't focus a lot on product tours. We focus on value-based actions. So for example, for StoryChief, it was that as soon as you go into the app, you should craft a message. That's a craft a blog post for you. And so you start clicking on the craft a story button. Instead of that, they showed the different tours. Hey, this is a campaign button. This is a story button. This is a social media audience button. And then you craft a story. And I think we just advise them to remove all of them and just focus on craft a story, because that's the most key value action which will show me the aha of the product. And I think this is the second big mistake a lot of companies do. And I think that's why we don't agree with the promoting a feature product towards itself. A lot of people love it because that was in 2012-13, the word came in, guided tours or product tours. But we believe that you should actually focus on one key activation when the user comes in. And yeah, I would say just don't do that. Don't show 5 tooltips at the same time. Show one tooltip, one message, one focus on one screen, and you will be able to see an improve in activation actually.
You want to focus on that value. One company that I noticed does this really well is Wistia. Like, as soon as you log in, they ask you what you want to accomplish first. And then based on that, they'll give you the right kind of steps to do what you want to do, so that it's focusing on value. So I want to ask you, what companies have you noticed really does onboarding really well? What are some like great examples that people should check out?
Yeah, so I have to be very honest, there's not one company that I found my favorite one, because one thing is great, but other thing is broken. So I used to love Drift a lot. So if you want to focus on making a great signup flow, Drift is an amazing example. But their onboarding and adoption kind of is not. So they really help you activate really well, but the onboarding is bad. So that's one thing. The other good example that I can see has a company which does really well is personalization, which is Vengage. It's a graphics tool. It's an online graphics tool, and you can do a lot of different graphics in there. So they really focus on personalization. If you click one button, it will show you the right button, infographics, for example. So they do personalization really well. The third company that I can think about right now, which does really well onboarding, is FullStory. FullStory has a lot of friction in there. It's not very easy to go through the steps. There are a couple of steps in there. They have huge friction. But the thing is, their app is very hard. So you have to install the script. Installing a script is not easy. So what they do is they want to get you dropped out on the way to actually only focus on product qualified leads to install it. And so they ask you a lot of details to personalize the experience, but then they show you the install the script. They don't show you, hey, this is how the story looks like. And they're still confused about if they should add the video part in there to show a little demo how it works, but they're still focusing on activation part. So they're good at as well. But I think the company that's doing really well right now is Airtable. Airtable is an app that asks you a couple of questions and shows you a lot of help material to actually get you set up. Notion is another example that they ask you one question. We did it in a teardown. They say, what would you like to, they ask you, what's your position? So we added product management. And based on product management, they showed me product management templates. But again, their adoption sucks. So they have a checklist. You can see it's amazing. But I've completely set up my Notion in there. But the problem here is that I don't know what to do next. And so the adoption is hard. So again, there's no perfect onboarding. I would say, if you want to really check out, just reach out to us. We recently created a good onboarding for us, user pilot. And you can see how we do it, how we focus one key action activation at a time. And you can trial it out and see how it looks. And I think we've done a good job lately on this, and because we changed the UX a little bit, so you can always sign up for our product and see how it looks like when you want to onboard somebody.
I want to talk about that. You talked about it with Drift and with Notion, where they're doing activation well, but they're onboarding, and you said it sucks. What do you mean by that? How do you have a good activation but terrible onboarding or terrible
product adoption?
So they have good onboarding, but not product adoption. So I think the thing is, as a growth manager, as a product manager, the problem comes in that you should start with minimum viable onboarding. So Notion has a really good minimum viable onboarding, but they don't have the next point in there. So right now I'm stuck different between compare pages and stuff. So I think you should take it as a project. Like first 2 months, you will just focus on activation and aha moment and analyze what's good there. And once you optimize that part of the journey, then you think about adoption features. Like, okay, now I have like 5 different features that people are not using and I would want them to use. And I will start creating different pop-up model, tooltips, helpful material out there for the user to learn. And you can also, the best way to actually do is ask them who they are and what they are trying to accomplish. And based on that, show them a customized, personalized journey. And you know that these are your customer paid successful to paid users who are using you. You can learn from what tools or what features they are using as a pattern, and then take it as a trend and then focus that how we can improve their adoption, feature adoption, by looking how existing users are doing it and what you want the user to do so that they don't churn later on. So I think it's a huge project. The onboarding never ends, actually. And even if you have fixed it right now, 1 year later, you have more features and you have to again do it something differently. So it's a never ending process, actually.
When we come back in just a moment, Azar tells you the difference between onboarding and product adoption and shares you how you can design and build a minimum viable onboarding. Just a quick thanks to our sponsor for this episode, 42 Agency. I know the founder of that agency for some time now, Camille Rexton. Camille and his team helps B2B SaaS companies streamline operation, implement new tech stack, and design ABM and demand generation strategies. They help you create a predictable revenue pipeline. I work with quite a few B2B SaaS companies, and that is not that easy. So getting an expert to help you out with that can really be helpful to accelerate the growth of your company. So you can get a free road mapping session now at fourtwo.agency/GMT. They've worked with some amazing companies like Unfleet, HubDoc, GuestLogix, FlexDay, and more. I also want to thank my Patreon supporters. If you don't like ads like this, you can support me for as little as $2 per episode for an ad-free version for this podcast. You'll also know who I have coming up and have all the growth cheat sheets I have so far and be part of a private Slack group. You can go to patreon.com/growth today to help with the cost to maintain and grow this podcast. Well, enough about this. Let's jump back into my chat with Azar. What I'm hearing is that the initial onboarding is like getting them to the aha moment. And then what you're calling product adoption is more getting them to use your other features. Is that
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, yeah. So for example, in terms of Notion, I know how to use templates, but I don't know how to create more pages for different departments and different nodes. So A department can't see the B department details, and B department people can't see the D department details. And then everything is there, but nobody can look at it. And yeah, how to create more pages, how to create different subsections, I need to go to a webinar for Notion to understand. So I think I have to spend around 3-4 hours one day just to learn through the webinars how they think about it. There's this really popular person in Notion's team who does that really well. So I will do that just to educate myself and then create that perfect wiki for our team.
How about for Drift? Like, is it the same thing where they get you to try out the first thing that you want to accomplish, and then they're also not doing a great job of doing product adoption?
Yeah, so they're doing great sign up flow, great onboarding, so you can set it up very quickly, but the thing is adoption is bad. So for example, I am a user, and I met Elias Torres yesterday as well, and what we learned a day before yesterday, and then I was telling him exactly the same thing. Hey, whenever I sign up, like sign in again, I mean, I signed out and I sign in again, I see this huge automation model in front of my face, which I don't want because I know how automation is working. And there's a group meeting button as well, which you are showing all the time. Whenever I come in, you show this to me all the time. So they are doing a bad job in there, but they are doing a good job in feature adoption by showing announcements. So on the right side, they show the announcement. I think Drift has a really good release note. But like, for example, right now, I have already used chat. I have used their playbook. I have used their automation feature, but I still have not used I've used their video, but I have not used the other account-based marketing tools. I think Now they should help me adopt that feature. Since let's say it's free on my plan or it's already included in my plan, why not just let me focus on that? One more thing that a lot of companies do really bad is that they always think about the first user who's signing up. They don't think about the second, third, and the fourth user, where you see already something is inside the app has been done. But and then so when I come to Storyche, when I come to Drift again, I need to know, okay, what will be there to help me set it up, because I'm the second and the third user. The second and third user is completely ignored in all of the onboardings usually. And that's just I think need to be taken care of as well. And we are also the users, even though you're not the admin user, we might not pay you, but we still want to use you. They don't do that. This is another mistake that a lot of SaaS companies
make. I never thought about it that way. Like, there's that initial onboarding, and then there's the product adoption. I want to ask about both of them. First of all, you said something that I've never heard of. You talked about minimum viable onboarding. What do you mean by that, and how can companies create their minimum viable onboarding?
Yeah, so we recently did a webinar on that. A lot of customers of us were thinking, hey, the thing is that usually people think that user onboarding tools are very easy to use, or it's easy to set up, but it is not. The thing is, it's easy to use, but you don't know how to do it. And so we focus now on minimum viable onboarding, where we say, hey, focus on first three key activation points, what the user want to do or what you want the user to know, so that they know what you want them to do. And for us, that's just minimum viable onboarding. Focus on just those three actions. And if they can accomplish those three actions that you've achieved. So for example, with user pilot, when somebody comes in, the first key activation for us is that a user should install the Chrome extension. Because if he doesn't install the Chrome extension, he or she will not be able to see all the UI patterns that we have there, a builder, that's very important. The second key activation we want them to do is play around and create an experience, which is a flow, for example, a tooltip or a model, so they can say, oh, this is how it is done. And when they save it, this is the second key activation. And the third and the last key activation, this is the most important key activation we do, is installing the script. Because if you don't install the script, means that you are not an activated client for us, that you have not understood the product well, or you are just trying the app, but the pain is not big enough to actually install the app. You just want to keep using it. So that if they do those three actions, this is minimum viable onboarding for us. And if they have done all three, that means that I, as a salesperson, I'm reaching out to you very actively to help you set up. And this is what I say, this is called product-led growth sales, which is basically that a sales team will not focus on the... So there's already a firmographic in there, but... Let's say if they have firmographic in there, how do you know a user is really qualified? And you can see that by seeing that in-app actions. And that's what we also suggest, and that's what we call user activation. And if the user is really activated, they've tried the app, they are much more likely to be close. So sales team should focus on PQLs, which is product qualified lead. That is user activation, and that is doing those three key activation points.
The more people are doing stuff on your app, the more likely they are to convert down the road.
Yeah.
I want to know about the other side, product adoption. What kind of strategies and things are you guys doing for user pilot to get them to adopt, you know, the other features that you have?
Yeah, so we started apparently using user pilot to show them webinars. So we learned that there's huge incoming of users coming to our platform. And then we're learning that there is a, regardless of the software, if the human element is there, we see a better conversion. So what we are doing is we are doing like weekly basic and advanced webinar. And that way we are helping them improve the adoption. But we do it, we use user pilot on user pilot to show the webinars platform. So that's one thing we do. But that's again outside of user pilot. But inside of user pilot, there's a lot of tiny features. For example, segmentation, right? So if somebody has already created an experience and the numbers are there in the app, well, we show them click on segments to create your segments to understand different kind of segments. For example, you should see how the user is using the app, the new user is using the app, and the existing user is using the app. So for example, I have this specific segment called user who is in free trial, is a new user, has signed up after X date, and the user is actually going ahead and and has done something inside the app, has already created an experience, has installed the app, everything is live. So this is one segment for me. So there's another segment where the user is power user. So they've used a checklist, they've used NPS, they've used this. So now what is then? Then we show them feature analytics. So we have this app feature that shows, this is a third tertiary feature for us, which is analyze what features the users are using inside your app the most based on the adoption, and then optimize based on that feature. So that is like the 9th and 10th feature I want them to understand. It's not important. This will not, let's say, it'll be a deal breaker or deal maker, but still they need to know to constantly improve the journeys. And so this is like, we try to show them through an app by showing hotspot in there, just educating, this is a tool tip, educating with a tool tip hotspot that, hey, this is something also there if you want to check out.
You said something that I find interesting, that adding a human element actually increases the conversion. Have you quantified that? Like, how much has having that webinar influenced conversion?
Yeah, so I can tell you that the conversion on the webinar through user pilots pop-up model that we used. So we saw that 31 people in app were signed up through in app, and then they 21 people signed up by email. But having a human element, I mean, is that as soon as somebody writes a chat, so I see that the somebody who responds to the chat immediately, let's say in first 5 minutes, that user is much more likely to convert. So I think that the probability is 50%. Then somebody who never talked to us, and this is what we are also going to in future add more human element. That's why we're not reducing support from our team, because we think that if we have a huge good support, the user is much more likely to convert, because there is one or two question that there's a question mark button there that they can always use to chat with us, and this is really important for them to understand if X feature they couldn't do. The thing is with user onboarding tools, the problem is that you create a flow and something doesn't pop up, and then you're like, oh, so it's not working for me, maybe this tool is bad, but maybe they have done it wrong and we have to educate them. And this thing, we even with user pilot, we want to add a little bit of human element, saying, hey, this is, you did wrong, maybe you want to fix this, and then immediately they fix and they're like really happy about it. So we learned that with having a human element inside the app, a little bit of like faces of people on the chat, responding quickly, seeing that, hey, support team is there, conversions are much better. So what we've done is like we basically have one thing which is going on, an automated user onboarding flow, but the second flow that is coming from me, which is I am looking inside their app and saying, hey, you have done this wrong. So I actively go inside their app and see how the checklist looks like. If the checklist does everything that is right, then I look at something else and I look at their targeting, which is again an advanced feature, and see, hey, you can do this thing right. And that way we see the conversion is increasing a lot more. So if I don't get in touch with that user, I've seen that they are not converting. So whenever I reach out to them, they're converting. And so my likelihood of converting a customer when I reach out to is more than 50%. I can't give you the exact number, right, but I'm seeing that this is how it's improving.
That's very similar to what Corey Haynes from Barometrics is doing. He's actually like reaching out one-on-one, offering to review their app and doing like a teardown of what you're doing. That's really fascinating. How about your sales team? Like, do you add a sales element, like somebody actively reaching out to try to get them on a demo or a call? Is that something that you've experimented with?
Yeah. This is something that we're doing anyway. So the thing is, if you use a kind of a email tool like intercom messages or intercom inbox and or use Drip, people see that this is automated. But when we have our own internal tool that we use, which is coming out of a person, and we are focusing on onboarding, and we say, hey, we give you 1 hour free onboarding. Make sure these things you have done well, and then we at least give one hour free onboarding to them so that they can set up. And we are seeing that person who gets onto onboarding has 90% of higher conversion than person who doesn't come. So that's one thing that's automated, we do it, but that's one thing. So we know that if somebody comes on onboarding onboarding call, this customer is going to close. So that's one human element that we already added in there. But I, as I said, just like Corey, I've seen his emails. And I know that when you write an email to this person, hey, I know that. So he also only reaches out to somebody who has actually activated, connected the account through Stripe. And then he says, hey, I can go in and show you how the product works. He's doing things that don't scale. And I also am focusing on doing things that don't scale. And my job is to take them to a call later. So I'm doing sales for the team. And I say, hey, I've seen that you have created one experience, one checklist. And you have also installed the app as well. And I know that you have two experiences in there. You might want to create more. Maybe let me help you create more. And then, and that's what I meant by product-led growth sales as well, because I know they have done what they have done. I know exactly where they are. And then I reach out to them to help them out.
That's a lot of manual work. What is, do you use an internal tool? What is that internal tool that you talked about? Is
it? So it's just an email tool. Like it's like Drip. It's exactly like Drip, but the emails are set up by hard coded because we wanted to go through Amazon server because we did not want to go into the primary channel. So when you go to Gmail, there is this primary channel, then there is this update or promotion channel. All that intercom Drip goes to in the promotion channel, not in the primary channel. And that internal tool directly takes from the server the email and sends it over.
Oh, so it's like homemade. Like it's not like something that I can use myself, that tool.
Right now, no, it's not even like there's no UX to that. It's just there.
Interesting. That's something that I've been thinking about as well. I want to talk about User Pilot now, and what kind of initiatives are you doing to drive growth outside of like the onboarding? Are you doing any awareness related stuff or any other stuff related to churn?
The webinar was the first awareness session that we did, but this was for the existing users. I'm assuming you're asking for activation and acquisition part, right?
Any other initiatives that you haven't already mentioned? Like you talked about the webinar, you talked about outreach, you talked about showing onboarding things. Is there any other initiatives you're doing to drive growth for User Pilot, whether it's anywhere in the funnel?
Yeah. So basically, I've already written blogs about it. So there's one thing that I've been doing a lot is Quora marketing. So for awareness session, basically awareness part, and what I'm learning that Quora drives a lot of like conversion. So there's an article that we can put again in the show notes. It's about Quora marketing. And what I learned that in order to drive organic growth, a lot of Quora articles are driving on the search engine. And what I did was whatever article on user onboarding, user activation, on improve user onboarding tools, user onboarding software was there, I put myself in the wiki of that specific URL, and then also answer that in a way that is not self-promotional, but just helping customer or just helping that viewer who's looking at it. So that's one thing I'm doing really well. So I every week I sit down at least 1 hour, 2 hour answering Quora questions. And that was inspired from Jason Lemkin, because I see that whenever he writes, people love it. So I just followed the way he was answering, and I was followed the way a couple of other people were answering. And it's the same answer that's on my blog as well. I'm just tweaking it according to the question. And so that's one thing really is driving growth to us. The second thing that really drove growth to us initially was Slack marketing. So nobody thinks Slack as a social media tool. And Slack has this thing called notifications. And when I have my competitor's name in there in the notifications, and especially the channels where I know they're niche channels, for example, growth channels, Slack channels, product channels. And so what I'm doing is I'm just writing my competitor's name, or I'm writing user onboarding, I'm writing user activation, I'm writing product adoption. And as soon as somebody writes about in any of these channels or any of these Slack workspace, I get notified by email, by Slack as well, that somebody's written about it. And I immediately respond to that answer by helping that person out. And indirectly they did drive to us. So we just recently closed a customer who was asking something on Product School. Hey, I'm looking for something like this. And that customer became our customer. He evaluated two different apps, us and competitors, and then he chose us over them. That's driving a lot of traffic. That's a reactive marketing as well. But I'm already active on that, but I'm reacting to those things so that I can immediately take lowest hanging fruit out there. These are two different channels that people don't think right away that this might drive traffic, especially initially. If you are an early founder, or if you're an early growth hacker who don't whose SEO will take time, or if your other marketing initiatives will take time. This is something that you can directly, taking advantage of an existing channels, will drive a lot of growth, and that drove a lot of growth to us. And now that, since I'm a friend with people out there, they already promote my article in their channels and they talk about it, there's a discussion on it. So I'm doing good content marketing, but I'm also making sure that these people in those channels also look at it, and not just shameless plug, but rather helpful. So people say, hey, I'm looking for something, how to do onboarding better. So I don't say, hey, look at my article, this will help you. I say, hey, I can do either onboarding tear down for you, that might help, or this is an article that did, and a lot of people make mistakes. I even help a lot of users in there who are not my customers, or they're already using my competitor's tool, which is way complicated to use, and they needed help, and so I just help them. So giving the value first as a marketer, I've learned a lot, and just getting goodwill, just getting some thank you for me is also enough, and then thinking about maybe it might come back to us one day.
I want to wrap up now and ask these two questions. I've asked this to almost every guest that I've talked to. What is your one piece of advice to any marketers who aspire to lead growth or to be leading marketing in a company one day?
Yeah, I think marketing is a very dynamic space, which will always keep improving, and always it will be always a challenging space. And that's why we all love it, because it always challenges us to do better things. And so I think they should always focus on learning. And within learning, I would say focus a little bit more on UX, because we are great at acquisition. We are great at lead gen. We write good cold emails maybe. But like a little bit of change in UX increases your conversion rates and increases your user experience. I know a company, a really big company, that has huge sales team in there, and it's a review company, by the way, a big review company, and they have a huge drop off on their review platform. They don't even have analytics in there, so and they don't know the conversion. It's too big. The company is too big to know the analytics in there, to know the what's the conversion drop off. So learning about UX and know how to fix it is a great way to improve numbers at the bottom line. That's one thing. And the second thing is copywriting. I'm a huge Dave Gehart fan, and I think that whatever books he have recommended, I've read all of them, and I'm always trying to improve my copywriting. I think this also increase the empathy and boost numbers as well, and it gives a better impression of a brand. And that's what I would recommend. So good UX learning, like learn something UX experience stuff, copywriting stuff, and analytics tools such as Amplitude, Mixpanel, or Heap, or some other tool like InnerTrends to just improve the analytics. So know how to set other companies' analytics up, and that's a great asset to have, because a lot of these companies are hard to set up, like even harder to set up as marketing automation.
That's good. Those are totally stuff that I've been thinking about as well. Last question, where can people find you or UserPilot online? Like, where can people find out more about that?
Yeah, so I'm starting to write blogs about whatever I'm learning on azershad.com, and I will start writing blogs on it, so they can simply find me there. Or for UserPilot, just userpilot.com. You can find me on LinkedIn. And if you really want to chat, you can also find me at azershad, AAZARshad, at Twitter, and feel free to write me. Happy to answer your questions, and whatever I'm learning, I'm sharing on my blog as well. So also UserPilot blog as well. So feel free to check them out as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Same here. It was nice chatting with you.
Well, that's it for this episode. I want to share with you my three key takeaways. First, focus on the outcome and not the future. When it comes to product tours, Azar suggests that you really focus on what the goal and the outcome of the user is. Craft a tour based on their goal. Second, onboarding doesn't end after a user becomes a paying customer. That's where product adoption comes in. There are hundreds of situations where on-demand or directed product tours and emails can help further educate how users can succeed with your product. Third, create a minimum viable onboarding. You do this by understanding the steps users need to take to achieve the first aha moment with your product. Then you can rally your product, marketing, design, and customer success teams getting users through that minimum viable onboarding. Did I miss something? Share with me your takeaways from this episode. I'd love to hear from my listeners. You can reach out to me on Twitter at RamleyJohn. My DMs are open, or you can email me ramley@growthtoday.fm. Before I end, I just want to thank those who made this episode possible. Like I said before, these folks help cover the cost of all the stuff that I have to do, hosting, editing, marketing tools, so I can really focus on getting more experts and getting them on the show for us to learn from. So I want to thank the sponsors from this episode, 42 Agency. They are a demand generation and ops agency. You can check them out at 42.agency/GMT. I also want to thank my Patreon supporters, my early adopter patrons, Jamie Ward from Las Vegas, Veronica from London, UK, Parisian Marcus from Brazil, Nicholas Vargas from Sydney, Sam Grover from New Zealand, Joseph Valenti from Quebec, Canada, Louis Nichols from Switzerland, Anwar from Canada. I really do appreciate you. And for you, if you would like to support me, there's three easy ways you can do it. First, you can tell a friend about this. That would be really easy. Second, you can join my mailing list. I have updates, weekly updates about this podcast. And I also will email you all the cheat sheets going forward. Like, you know, that's amazing. Why, like I said, why take notes when you can steal mine? You can get that at growthtoday.fm. And third, if you do want to support me further, you can support me for as little as $2 per episode for an ad-free version of this podcast. And all the growth cheat sheets that I have so far, with your support, I can pay for my hosting fees, marketing tools, and get more amazing guests on this show. With your help, I can continue to grow this podcast for us to learn from. Well, that's it for this episode. Until the next one, and as always, keep on growing.